Blog Talk Radio.
923, I'll give you a correct address, but we do have a fire in a one-story ordinary.
Welcome to Extrication Radio.
Good evening. I'm Dave Dalrymple. Welcome to Extrication Radio. This is the July 2019 edition of Such. Like Bobby just said, welcome, like I just said too, welcome to Extrication Radio. I'm just a little flustered. I just walked in from the gym and you'll probably hear me crunching and slurping a little bit. So I'm going to be eating dinner while I'm talking to you tonight. Tonight's episode is going to be a little special. It's an important episode, I believe. I want to talk to you about something that's up and coming and important. I know I talk to you about important topics every time I talk to you all and record things, but this is a little special. And it's something that, well, honestly, a lot of people haven't talked about yet. And I'm kind of surprised, considering that a lot of my colleagues out there are pretty sharp tools in the toolbox. And yes, I know all of you have heard about a lot of topics that we talk about all the time, and they usually revolve around new technology. So yes, you've heard it beat to death about technology items like safety systems, airbags. Airbags will never go away until the next best thing comes out. You know, we've all seen the Demolition Man about 2 decades ago where the car fills up with foam and basically cocoons people in. That will probably come into existence sometime in the future. Maybe not in my lifetime, but probably in our children's lifetime. I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest with you. Or some extent of that type of technology. Do not be surprised, especially with the type of different types of bags and different types of locations that are coming out. Right now, we can see airbags that come out between the front seats. That's here. That's coming. That's already here. We will see more vehicles with that this coming model year. It's already here in GM products and in overseas from some of the high-end cars. And really, I say overseas. Cars are really global now, to be honest with you all. So I used to say overseas, meaning cars outside of North America. They really don't change that much anymore, depending on European and North American markets. They change very little anymore. Unfortunately, for I'll kind of sidebar this a little bit. Enthusiast cars change very little, except for Ford products. Ford, take the hit. You shouldn't have stopped selling cars here in North America other than Mustangs. Hint, hint, hint. Sorry about that. But anyway, but safety systems, we can have 17 different locations today of safety systems that occur. And the most safety systems in a vehicle today are now 14 people. Okay. 14. Think about that. That's pretty close to Demolition Man type of, if you think about it. Okay. Safety systems, motive power. We're going to start to see, hybrids and electric vehicles have really taken off and capture a tremendous amount of the market share. We're going to see that grow more and more every year. We're seeing motorsports have really been taken over by those two types of vehicles. They're the wave of the future, people. That's what's going to be the motive power of next. Following that's going to be hydrogen power, I believe. It's really the reason why hydrogen hasn't come about is the storage capabilities. I think that's what's holding that back, really. Even though they say they've made progress, they haven't made progress enough to make it really viable. Just like the old General Motors EV1s, those responders that can remember back in the early 90s when EV1s were a pilot program in Southern California, when GM leased EV1s in Southern California. And then when the pilot program was done, took them all back and scrapped them all. They didn't really think that it would go anywhere. So, well, General Motors, hindsight, 30 years, now look at it. It did go places. And then the last part of technology, materials construction and that construction methodology pathway. Wow, that's been the biggest thing that has affected us all, I think, in the grand scheme of things. That reaches us every day. It will reach us every day tomorrow, every day in the future. It will be more difficult and will increase so in the future. And it's not just alloys, it's going to be composites. Composites are going to make the big difference in the future. I think our tools are going to be different 5 years from now. The biggest difference is going to be in cutting tools. The cutting blades and the shapes of cutting tools are going to be, I think, are going to be tremendously different 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Huge. Because as the vehicles go from alloys to composites, they're going to go from a material towards composites are basically going to be fibrous. It's going to be going towards a wood type of material being fibrous. It's going to have to go to a different shape of blade to be effective, more so, along with power. So it's going to be a different shape and power. It's going to be coupled together. So it's going to be a whole different kind of mindset, I believe. So technology is going to be in constant flux. It's going to constantly be dynamic. That will be an always change. But there are some dynamics today that really are changing and really making a difference, that there is some changing come about that really nobody has really captured completely and are moving towards taking into effect and making movements towards and embracing and putting into an extrication mindset. And hear me out with this. Now, part of this goes into, and it really starts out with the mindset of 5 or 6 years ago. Think about 5 or 6 years ago, and it comes down to, the constant in all of our extrication and vehicle rescue principles. And that one constant, there's two constants in really vehicle rescue. One is safety, which job one, we know. You, me, our crew, the patient. But bottom line is, you and I are job one. We have to be safe. the patient is number two out of this. So, but the other part of this is the patient. We're there to provide and produce, or at least as much as possible, to produce a viable patient. That's the goal out of all of our evolutions we've ever done. That's the whole mindset. That's the whole idea behind what we're supposed to be doing, right? At least that's the way I've always learned this from. At least remembering what my parents were on the rescue squad when I was a kid. And one of the first extrication class that I ever took. And that was a really long time ago. That hasn't changed. And I think that's any kind of rescue class, rescue skill. That's the premise of any kind of thing. And I think if you look up the word rescue, that's the dynamic of that word. The whole idea behind that is to provide for, to rescue somebody. You're there to provide and to produce. It's kind of like savior. You're supposed to be there to save somebody's life. So the whole idea behind vehicle extrication and vehicle rescue as a methodology is to provide that. Now, what has happened over the last 6 years? We've seen the whole mindset and methodology behind C-spine management and backboarding and all that kind of stuff. Kind of one of the principles that has been put in place since the 1970s, at least here in North America, we've been told and taught and hammered into our heads that we cannot move that vehicle at all. We're not supposed to move the vehicle. The vehicle's not supposed to move out of consequence of what we do or anything. The whole mindset of that patient is not supposed to move nothing at all. A quarter of an inch of that patient's spine can produce a C-spine or a spinal cord injury that could produce paraplegic injury or some spinal cord injury to that patient. So we have to make sure that our patient doesn't move no matter what we do. That has been beaten to our heads. Whether you're an EMS person, whether you're a rescuer, whatever. Whether you're an EMT, paramedic, whatever. That's what you've been told. And then all of a sudden, we're told, no, that's wrong. We were told that that's a fallacy. We were told that it's a statistic. That's incorrect. Patients actually do better when they are allowed to self-extricate. We're show studies now that actually we actually do worse for the patient by the methodology that we've been taught. We've been taught how to extricate patients safely does more injury to them than letting them self-extricate, even when they're injured, because they can hold themselves better than we can do it. That's the truth. And there's studies that show that. There's studies that show that. Honest to God. So that's not a lie. And there's computer statistics that show it. There's all sorts of information that show it today. So all the things that we've been brought upon that in the past have said that we were supposed to show have been wrong. Or have been incorrect, at least. How about that? I won't say that they're wrong, because I hate to say that people have lied, but they've been proven wrong. Okay? Even the golden hour, okay? Even the golden hour is not correct. They have come down to say that even the golden hour that have been taught, even the whole thing, about PHTLS and the whole synopsis behind the golden hour is a fallacy. It's not correct. It's the whole thing behind the theoretical 60 minutes of time, the golden hour behind trauma, is not correct. It comes down to that a lot of this stuff has been extrapolated and bent over time and has been taken out of context over time. And unfortunately, has been repeated and extrapolated further over time and has been believed because people didn't want to either go against the wave, so to speak, the wave of what most people believed, but without scientific proof, or didn't want to go against what some quote-unquote experts in the field said. And we all know how experts go. Okay? 50 miles outside of your home or 25 miles outside of your home, whatever the miles are, and you're an expert. Okay? So, let's think about that for a second. Now, a lot of you are probably thinking, well, Dave, I'm not an EMS person. So what does that make a deal? What does that make a difference for me? Okay. I'm not an EMS person. I'm just a rescue guy. What does that mean to me? Well, think about it this way. Okay, so you're not an EMS guy, but you've been told you must make sure this car is rock solid. You cannot do anything. You cannot move this car. You cannot do whatever. All right. The problem is today, as much as, and I'm a firm believer, is I've always taught people that they should always stabilize a vehicle for a bunch of different reasons. Not only to minimize movement, because unwanted movement is a hazard, really. You don't want the vehicle to roll away. There's plenty of YouTube videos. You go out and search on YouTube and search for roll away vehicles at an extrication, and you'll find lots of videos, believe it or not. I happen to watch a vehicle at an extrication watching a crew do a door pop, and the car rolled away on them because they didn't even chock the tires. I mean, come on. And you know why? Because they were lazy. Not because they didn't have enough people to do it, because that's what I hear as an excuse. I hear people tell me all the time, oh, Dave, we have minimal staffage. We only have two guys on a truck. We only have two guys on an ambulance. We only have four guys on an engine. Come on. It takes 30 seconds to put four step chocks underneath a car. Give me a break. Give me a break. That's terrible. Golden standard, or I should say, the golden standard, or the golden guidelines, or whatever you want to call it, the best practices, and really the best practices is the correct word here. You should be able to, in 30 seconds, put four step chocks and two wheel chocks down underneath a car on its wheels, and get that car to not move with two people and do a hazard survey, a basic hazard survey. even a minute. Even a minute. Come on, people. This is not rocket science. Don't be lazy. Really. Come on. So, just think about that for a second. If I'm telling you that we don't need to necessarily make this car rock solid, you have some flexibility. You really should make sure the car doesn't move. But part of this vehicle stability is make sure your tool evolutions work properly. That's the other part of vehicle stability. Because if you don't have your stabilization right, okay, say you're going to do a dash lift down the road. And a lot of things today to get somebody out of a vehicle, really a lot of times need to make some sort of dash movement. Okay, because a lot of times with frontal collisions, the front end of the vehicle absorbs a lot of energy. The front clip crushes, the dash comes down, or the footwell comes in, or the footwell crumples around people's feet. You're going to have to do a dash displacement of some kind. That doesn't always mean the dash comes down, but you might have to push the footwell downwards too. So that means some direction of that footwell area needs to move. So vehicle stabilization doesn't necessarily always mean it needs to be rock solid. And I tell people this all the time. Part of your scene survey should take a really good look of what is making your person stuck or making them not move. Okay? You might need to move your stabilization out so your footwell or your floor can actually come down when you do your dash lift. If your dash goes up 4 inches and your footwell goes down 4 inches, space is gained either way. Who cares? A lot of people think that you need to lever the dash all the way out through the top of the roof of the car. That's a trick. Tool manufacturers come in and do that as a demonstration to show what their strength can spread. You need, in all reality, to get somebody out 2 or 3 inches. Let's be real. We don't need 12 inches of room. That's ridiculous. Okay? Real world here, people. This isn't some kind of tool demonstration. We're talking real world. And the same thing with some of these tool evolutions that are out there today. You know, there's a lot of different things that can be done today, a lot of different tool evolutions. But a lot of these things, and this comes down to, and I get into kind of like rows with some of my friends that have different ideas, and I give them credit all the time. They have different ideas about how to do things and all these different tool evolution ideas. I give them credit. There's a lot of different ways to skin the cat. There's always has been. But the problem is, and this is a thing that comes down to this, and I've got some of them to kind of look at my way of looking at this now, that people are not putting patience, or at least a patient representation, and this is the important way that I say it, a patient representation. I don't care whether it's a dummy, a blow-up MCI man, because we have a couple of those in my truck. Somebody, something that represents a patient, so you can make students understand that there's a person there. Because if you can't get the student to understand there's a person there, they're not going to carry that over to a real world call. That you need to put a barrier in place between tool work and that person. They're not going to not understand that, well, I did this tool evolution in training, but why won't it work for real? Well, that's because you can't put the tool that close to the person without hurting them. And things like that. these things need to carry over to the real world. We need to start practicing them on with people or representations of real people in our training. We need to come back to using them, a patient representation or a mannequin or a live casualty, so to speak, in place. We need to do this. We really, really need to do this. And we're not. We've gotten away from it. Not by some people. Some people still do it. I've never gone away from it because that's important. That is so important to make people realize it. But by and large, many people have gotten away from it. But think about that for a moment. If people are clearing C-spines in the field, and we're changing our whole mindset about vehicle stabilization, we're changing our methodology about what we do stabilization for. Think about what we need to do stabilization for today. Think about how you put that mindset into your classroom, into your practical. You need to rethink some of your actual classroom training. You need to reevaluate that. That's important today. And I bring this up and people look at me and they say, oh yeah, oh yeah, but it's not even like a small thing. You need to really sit there and think about it, because EMS people will come up and say to you, oh, they can walk out. Well, okay, can they walk out? But can they walk out? Maybe they can, but maybe they can't, because maybe your tool evolution still need to have that correct stabilization to do this right, for your tool evolutions to still work properly. And if Ben Carr is in a precarious position, well, that's still, all bets are off. You still need to put struts in place and stabilize right and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about the 95% of the time when a car is on its wheels. The tires might be inflated or not. That kind of stuff, we know. And think about that. Cars that are, have their tires inflated or not. Think about that. Run flats. How many cars have run flats today? There's a lot of cars with run flats. You're never going to deflate a run flat tire today. That just isn't going to happen. You think you're going to deflate that tire out in the field? Just ain't happening. Just is not going to happen, people. You're going to need to wedge up. And that all things, and then let's come back to that, okay? That four-wheel on-the-ground stabilization. The go-to thing is step chocks. Will step chocks really, really work today? As cars get lower to the ground, step chocks just don't work as well as they used to. You're better off a lot of times, and I show this anymore too, a platform of 4x4s and a big wedge on top of it probably work a hell of a lot better anymore. Or even a 6x6 wedge by itself will probably do a better job than a step chock anymore. Think about it and try it in your training. You know, we get these junk, and that's the other part of this. We get the wrong cars to train on too. We get cars out of the junkyard that are undamaged. The complete wrong cars. And I know, it's cheap, it's what they give us, it's what we got to work with. I hear you completely. But it's such the wrong vehicle to work with. It's the wrong kind of material to break. It's the wrong kind of material to cut. It's the wrong kind of material to stabilize because it's too high off the ground. It's not realistic. And I know, how do we get those cars? Well, they're hard. They're hard to access to. You know, the thing is to always look for classes, and there are more classes out there than you believe that have new model cars that are available. My friend Toots down in North Carolina, Torzato Lee, he runs a class, North Carolina Extrication School. He just had a class a couple months ago down in Virginia, Mid-Atlantic Extrication School, if I remember the name of it correct. And he had cars from, Ford, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Hyundai, Kia, with all sorts of large vehicles involved and all sorts of different types of things. There were all sorts of new model cars, all sorts of different kind of equations. They're using Moditech crash recovery software to identify all different hazards. Here was a prime example of using all these different issues with hazards involved with these vehicles. So here was the perfect example to do that. And there are different types of training out there. You just have to look for it. So that's one of the things right off the bat that we really need to start to look at and really kind of evaluate what's changing with our training and extrication. It's going to change out on the street right away because EMS shows up and they're going to, if they clear C-spine in the field, they're going to walk the patient right out of the car if they need to. And you know as well as I do, that's a better thing too. But if we need to extricate them? We're going to remove the parts of the vehicle that we have to, and then they're going to walk out of the car, sit on the stretcher. Maybe they'll put a seat collar on them and put them in the ambulance and ride away. That a lot of times is now best practices or the standard of care, regardless of where you are. And maybe where you are, it's going to vary. It varies outside of North America now, by country, depending on what their standard of care is too. It's a very fluid situation depending on where you are. It's not hard and fast. And the problem with a lot of this is there is no, on our end of things, on rescue end of things. And this is the thing that has bothered me. And one of my good friends, John Evans from ESI Equipment, we have this at least monthly conversation about this. And we've had this for years talking about this. On our end of things, on research-wise, as a rescuer for extrication, there is no research on our end to show all these different things that we talk about criteria-wise with patients. There really isn't, because there's nobody to give us money to do this. There is money for fire science for about burning buildings and cancer and different kinds of burn studies about how things burn, how rapidly they burn, and all that kind of stuff. There's medical studies on all sorts of different injury patterns and stuff like that. But there is no concrete proof about any type of extrication studies. And the problem part of that issue is, for casual observation, every motor vehicle collision is different. There are different dynamics on every single one, regardless. But there is no funding. There is no one body, sanctioning body or umbrella that would take the reins and do any kind of specific research even casual research or casual observation. There's not even casual observation. Tool manufacturers do some research and development. There's probably, I know of two tool manufacturers that do kind of R&D and auto manufacturer plants by putting their tools in, by cutting different types of material and cutting different assemblies to test their cutting tools. Okay. But that's just cutting materials. That's not really going out and cutting vehicles post-crash. Like, if there was a way to, for the Insurance Institute or even NCAP to allow some sort of body to come in and allow us to study vehicles that have been crashed and then allow us to actually extricate and couple these together with studies on what injuries were caused, because their medicins can obviously detect what kind of injuries were done to by different parts of the vehicle, and then kind of put that in relation to how our tools interact with all that and combine them together to put a study together on where we might be able to weaken the vehicle structure to enhance our extrication capabilities and make it more rapid, make our extrications more rapid and speed our on-scene extrication times to facilitate better patient outcomes. That would be awesome. That would be a thing that would be fantastic. But yet, nobody lets us do it. I've mentioned this to different people a bunch of times, and it goes nowhere. But yet, we do this more often than structure fires. We cut up more cars than structure fires. There's more people that get injured in motor vehicle crashes than anything. Yet, doesn't occur. No one's ever taken notice. NHTSA doesn't do anything about it. Another good example, PHTLS. PHTLS has always been behind the curve on injury dynamics. It took them up until 2015, 2016, or I should say the last revision of PHTLS, to realize that head and chest trauma from motor vehicle crashes were they still took that as a major injury. Airbags have really kind of killed that whole thing. 20 years ago, it's like, hello, where have you been? Push the rock out in front of the firehouse and come out and see the light of day. These are the things that people behind desks in a room somewhere are not aware of. Yet the people that are out on the streets and the people that do this stuff, that tell people that about that, don't want to see, don't want to change. And that's sad, because that's what's going on. And that's why I say, and I have to say, this is probably, that's why I said this episode was going to be kind of important for me to say, because all my different mentors in the vehicle extrication world that have always been people that have kind of rubbed people the wrong way in a lot of different ways, because they have been mavericks. And like, I have thought of the prime example of that right now in this day and age is Mark Van Appen from, I'm going to kill this because now I drew blank. I'm sorry, Mark, but Mark is a prime example of being a rogue. And right, wrong, or otherwise, if you know you're right, you're right. And people will say you're wrong, and that's fine. You stand alone on your own merits. And this is something that I feel is right. People will say I'm wrong, and people will say I'm not. I'm just out of touch. I'm sorry. I am right on this. This is something that needs to happen. I think that would make a huge difference in outcomes. It would make a huge difference in training people today. It would make a huge difference in education of our instructors. And there's a big difference between education and training. And that's what needs to happen. That's what needs to happen to our trainers that are out there in the fire service today, is they need to be in touch with what's happening with our patients. They need to be in touch with what's happening with what's going on with the extrication, or really the vehicle rescue world as a methodology as a whole. That's what needs to change. And there's a lot of things that need to occur within that. And this is just a piece of it. And that's why I said this episode is important. And that's why, even though I premised the beginning of this about vehicle technology, because that is always important. And if you don't stay in touch with that, that's just going to scream by you. You can go by 6 months, maybe a year. Maybe you won't catch up. Maybe there's nothing that will go dramatically, you know, hugely different. Some years, yes. Some years, no. Okay? Because I've gone by with some things that haven't dramatically changed a lot. Other years, no, where there's been huge differences. Like, this coming year, you're going to see the advent of mild hybrids come out. 48-volt hybrids are going to change. They're going to change the realm of hybrid vehicles. You're going to see hybrid motors on wheels, so to speak. Instead of a big electric motor, drive motor on drivetrain, you're going to see small electric motors on wheel hubs. Even though that's been coming, it's going to happen. Probably this model year, you're going to see it. And you're going to see the high voltage drop to 48 volts. But the rest of this, like the whole thing with patient management, where you're going to see where C-spine changes things and changes what we do as a whole role and how we approach things with stabilization and some of our tool evolutions and how we approach it as a whole, as a mindset, that's a totally different it's a totally different game. That's what's happening right now. That's what should be happening right now. That's the way that your instructor should look at it. That's what you as a rescue technician should take a look at it too. And think about it long and hard and think about what you do and how it approaches. There's going to be more things to go along with that. There's a couple people out there that talk about controlled vehicle relocation. Those of you that do stuff at motorsports events, motorsport venues, have been doing controlled vehicle relocation for years, because certain motorsport vehicles, like open-wheeled vehicles, you roll over an Indy car or a Formula V or any kind of open-wheel car, the only way that driver is going to get out of that car is to put it back on its wheels. There's no other way to do it. Those of you that are NASCAR fans remember Michael Waltrip's rollover at Daytona. The only way you were going to get his big butt out of his car was to put it back on its wheels. Well, they did a semi-controlled rollover. It wasn't too graceful, that's for sure. But that's the only way he was going to get out of that car. Now, motorsports, a controlled vehicle relocation, is a totally different animal than a street car, because in motorsports, they're a driver is belted into a seat at least by a 6-point harness, if not more. And in today's day and age, those seats are, you're in a cocoon. You're not moving. You're not moving at all. You don't really have to worry too much about C-spine because most of them have a Hans device or a head and neck restraint. Because I'm sorry, Hans is a copyright trademark device, a head and neck restraint device. So you don't have to worry too much about movement. Okay. But some extrications, there are no other way other than to move that vehicle sometimes. And I know in the past, some people would absolutely in no way, shape, or form would move that vehicle. They would go do a 3 or 4 hour extrication because they would have to plow through whatever. And if they had the choice, they could have moved the vehicle to make it a 15 or 20 minute extrication. That would have made a heck of a lot more sense. Maybe even produced a more viable patient. Because they wouldn't do it because that's not the best practice. Well, sometimes you know as well as I do, you got to do what you got to do. And sometimes you have to push the envelope. And that's what comes about. Well, now with the whole C-spine thing gone out the window, now you can do that. And nobody will say the wiser, really. Nobody's going to say the wiser. But how do you do it correctly and effectively? That's the key here now. Nobody's taught how to do it. Now there's a whole new field. How do you do it safely and correctly? That's the key now. Think about that. That's the big thing. Because I've had a whole bunch of people ask me, hey, do you teach this? What do you think about that? How do you do this? How would you do that? I get an email or a message nearly every day now about that. And I know how to do it on a racetrack. I know how to do it on a rally stage. Some of it is a complex kind of, especially on a rally stage, some of it is a complex kind of rigging thing with a grip hoist and some anchor straps and a whole bunch of stuff. And sometimes I've seen it done overseas with about 25 people, basically relocate the car with human power. It's a whole kind of rally thing. So it's a whole bunch of different things. I think extrication is at a fork in the road at the moment. I really do. It can go different ways right now. I really do. Because it can be approached different ways than it can be in the past. And it's because of this. And I think there's some other things coming down the road too that are going to change it. Not necessarily for bad, and maybe not necessarily for good either. It all depends on what it is spun for good or for bad. So food for thought. With that, I'm going to kind of end it for that at the moment, because I'm going to let you digest on that for now, because that's a lot to think about. And I want to follow up with this with, because I'm working on quite a big article about this with some graphics and stuff like that. And I want you all to think about it and chew on it a little bit. Questions or comments will be greatly appreciated, and feedback will be greatly appreciated. So reach out to me. Twitter is at Carslayer. Email is carslayer@roadwayrescue.com, or simply roadwayrescue@gmail.com. You can always call me at 908-392-0400, or you can get a hold of me through fireengineering.com. They know how to get a hold of me as well. Things, upcoming events, we're going to be having, this is through Roadway Rescue, we're going to have Jersey Rescue Days the first weekend in November. That's November 2nd and 3rd at our South Jersey training site at Tabernacle Rescue Squad. It's going to be a two-day event. Saturday is going to be all classroom presentations from, we have 8 different people going to be doing presentations right now. And then Sunday is going to be practical evolutions. Controlled vehicle relocation is going to be one of those things that we're going to talk about and actually do. So if you're interested, there's going to be flyers and information on social media within the next week that will be up. And how to get involved and partake in the class. So with that, I will see you next. The next Extrication Radio is in September. Be safe out there. I will talk to you soon. Thank you very much. Be safe. Thank you.